This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today we've been shining a light on the shadowy corners of big food. A little later on, we're going to hear about an investigation of America's meat monopolies. But first, let's look back to a time before food conglomerates and agribusiness, the Middle Ages. What did diets look like back then? To shed some light is Andrew Yotishke, professor of medieval history at Lancaster University. He's author of A Hermit's Cookbook, Monks, Food, and Fasting in the Middle Ages. And since we've been talking about the processed food industry and the abundance of salt and fat and sugar in American diets, we asked him what the early medieval hermits, forerunners of the monks, would have thought of Oreos, Fritos, and Lunchables.
Well, they'd be rather taken aback, I think. They'd certainly be bewildered by the variety of different kind of foods available to us today. And they'd be bewildered also by the different taste sensations and the richness of different tastes. The principle of eating for early medieval hermits and monks was simplicity. And that meant not only choosing foods that grew abundantly and could be easily collected or easily grown. It also meant making sure that the food that you ate tasted as close as possible to what was regarded as its natural or original taste.
So if you were a wayward pilgrim stopping in at a monastery and were able to share a meal, what might that meal look like?
Medieval eating is not like the way we eat today, in that they don't necessarily serve courses in what are called removes. So they would have a lot of different kinds of foods out on the table at the same time, which is closer actually to the way that people eat in the Far East. So you'd have a table laid with different dishes, and you'd take your pick from them. There would certainly be in a monastery guest house in the later Middle Ages, there would be meat dishes. Sometimes roast meat, sometimes game, sometimes meat made with the entrails of meat, which is very common. There would be pies and pastries. And we know that medieval people were very fond of pastries filled with meat and vegetables. There would be locally grown vegetables and herbs. There would be beans. There would be fresh fruit. And if you were lucky, there would then be desserts made with dairy products, eggs and fruit in various kind of combinations, blancmanges, trifles, and so on.
Andrew, your book, A Hermit's Cookbook, Monks, Food, and Fasting in the Middle Ages, brings us through the diets of the Eastern mystics and hermits to the monastic orders that grew throughout the Middle Ages. Was their diet similar, or did it vary based on order or region?
Well, it varied based on region more than on order. The Rule of Benedict, which is written in the 6th century, provided a kind of template for both the kinds of foods that should be eaten and the amount of food that should be eaten. But since every monastery was initially self-regulating, it was difficult to assess how much was being eaten or whether the monasteries were actually keeping to that rule. So whereas in the Eastern Mediterranean, olives, dates, figs, and lentils, chickpeas would be the staple of your original hermits and monks. Of course, in the West, in the Middle Ages, we're talking about a different variety of vegetables, much more root vegetables, bread, carbohydrates, and some legumes as well, beans, but more likely to be broad beans or green beans than the sort of pulses that you'd find in the Eastern Mediterranean.
In what cases were St. Benedict's rules relaxed? And by the way, I noticed that he also introduced or allowed wine.
Yes. Well, he introduced or permitted wine because it was safer to drink than water. And it was the standard drink in Italy, and Benedict was Italian. He was writing for largely Italian communities. But of course, in those days, wine was usually drank watered down to some extent, mixed with water. But it was necessary for to make the water safe to drink. An example of how the diet varied is that in the areas of Western Europe where there was extensive wine growing, wine was drunk by monks. But in Northern Europe, certainly in the British Isles, beer was much more common because it was usually locally made throughout the Middle Ages. So medieval monks would always have been making their own beer because they didn't have the technologies to preserve it over long distances.
To what extent did emerging technological changes and trade change the monastic diet?
I think they had a huge impact. I think that what's happening in more or less the period from about 1000 AD to 1200 and beyond is that Europe is undergoing what I think of as a food revolution. And it's a revolution that comes about through, as you say, through technological change, the introduction of things like windmills, of the deep share plough, which means that the growing and processing of food becomes easier, but also through the revival of trade across the Mediterranean. By 1200, we know that Western Europeans are importing spices and foods from the East in quite large quantities. And with those actual commodities, they're also importing techniques of cooking and preparing food. And these are influencing diet all over Western Europe, not only in great secular households, the households of kings and lords, but also the households of bishops and of monasteries. Monks don't want to be left out of the food revolution.
That's interesting. It didn't represent something more worldly that they would want to reject?
Well, perhaps it should have done, but it didn't. And I think one reason why it didn't is because we don't often realize that monasticism in medieval Europe was very much an aristocratic profession. Peasants don't become monks. The people who are living in and working in monasteries tend to be from the upper classes, from the landowning classes. And of course, it's those classes who are benefiting most from the food revolution because they have the wherewithal to eat a richer and more varied diet. So as we see, I think, a greater divide in Europe between what the rich are eating and what the poor are eating, we have to remember that monasteries are part of the rich world rather than the poor world.
Well, Andrew Jotyszki, a pleasure speaking with you today.
And you. Thank you very much for having me.
Andrew Jotyszki is author of A Hermit's Cookbook, Monks, Food and Fasting in the Middle Ages. He's also professor of medieval history at Lancaster University.